Welcome to Columbus Perspective, a weekly public affairs presentation of The Fan. I'm Kate Burdett. Coming up, Jay Fox speaks with an expert about flu season. Jay will also chat with a doctor about menopause, and he'll have a conversation about the impact of hurricanes on our state. Plus, Doug Petcash of Face the State will have a look at state politics. First up on Columbus Perspective.
As cooler weather sets in, another season is on the horizon. We know it, unfortunately, as flu season. Last year, the CDC reported roughly 82 million flu cases in the U.S., with 1.3 million requiring hospitalization. Now, we don't know what the impact of this season will be, but healthcare professionals are stressing vaccination is vital, especially if you are in a high-risk group. A recent study by CVS Health indicates that more than 60% of people intend to get a flu shot this year, which is about the same as last year. But last year, only 48% of those people followed through. CVS pharmacist and district leader Victoria Epper-Jesse joins us to share the importance of getting that flu vaccine this season. Welcome, Victoria.
Thank you, Jay. Thank you for having me.
It's our pleasure. We've got to prepare for flu season. We do this every year. What is the first thing we should do? How do we get started?
Jay, you already really hit the nail on the head here with preparation, right? The weather's cooling down. Kids are back to school. We're probably knee-deep in checklists. But one thing that we should not be forgetting is how to prepare for our health with all the fall bugs and germs and viruses out there. So you're running to get the vitamin C, I'm sure everyone's stocking up on, or any type of fever reduction medication that you always want to have on hand. Right now is a really great time to start doing some research about what vaccinations make sense for you and your family.
There's a lot of confusion about vaccinations right now. Contradictions coming from local, county, state, and national healthcare concerns. Who should get vaccinated?
Great question. There is a ton of confusion out there. The CDC still recommends anybody 6 months of age or older, as long as you don't have any kind of allergy to the flu vaccine in the past or any ingredients in the flu vaccine, anybody 6 months of age or older should be getting vaccinated from the flu this year.
Now, I get my flu shot every year like clockwork, sometime between the 15th of September and the 15th of October. Is that the window that we want to go for, or does it matter as long as we just get it?
That's a great question, Jay, and I love the consistency of that for sure. So that's a great time. You know, I think one of the biggest mistakes sometimes people make are really waiting till the outbreak is already in their community, and then they run to get that flu shot. But it does take time, 2 weeks, to reach its full efficacy. So getting it between that September-October timeframe is great because that's before peak, and you'll be protected when that peak hits. But, you know, if it hits November and you still haven't gotten it, we still recommend that you go get it because flu season can run all the way through May.
Now, when we get the flu shot, we are actually injecting into our bodies a live variant of the virus. We may see symptoms, but does that mean we're going to get the flu?
Myth, Jay. So, you know, what we're injecting in our bodies, it's actually inactivated, or it could just have proteins from the flu virus. So when you feel some of those common side effects, right? So fever, chills, maybe a headache, that's actually just your immune system doing exactly what we need it to do to make sure you are protected from actually contracting the flu. So it doesn't give you the flu. It's completely safe. It is completely inactivated variant that we inject into your arm.
A lot of times people get multiple vaccinations at the same time. So, for example, there's a new COVID variant that people are talking about right now. There's pneumonia, there's shingles, there's what is the respiratory virus vaccine that I'm thinking of?
RSV.
Yep, RSV. Can we get all of these at the same time, or should we stagger them?
with your healthcare professional. It's absolutely safe to get, I think the two hot topic ones right now are flu and COVID. We are following those ACIP guidelines, of course, and that'll be available, you know, when we get the green light on that. But it is perfectly safe to get, you know, both of those at the same time. As far as adding anything additional, just chat with your local healthcare provider or CVS, MinuteClinic. They can take a look at your medical records holistically and make the best recommendation for you.
Now, you talked about stocking up on vitamin C. Is there such a thing as taking too much vitamin C? Do we have to be careful about that?
So, you know, vitamin C and zinc and combination is really, you know, great to help as well with that immune system. But again, please check with your local healthcare provider, your pharmacist, your doctor, just to make sure that you're staying within safe doses for prevention.
Now, when I get the flu shot, how long after the flu shot is given does it become effective, and how long does it last?
Great question. So after you get it, you know, you start building immunity right away, but it does take 2 full weeks to reach efficacy. So you get a little stronger every day, but, you know, you're not at full capacity until that 2 weeks has passed. And it will get you through flu season. So we typically recognize flu season to end around May. And, you know, it'll keep working for you all the way through then.
Now, I know we can get flu shots at our primary care provider. And, you know, of course, CVS is where I go. Where else can we get a flu shot? And is it always covered by insurance, or do we have some out-of-pocket to consider?
Good question. Always check your local healthcare department's website. Sometimes there are flu clinics where, you know, we bring the flu shot to you. So it might be at your local farmer's market, somewhere very unexpected. So just check your local news station, your local newspaper to see the most accessible place. If that's, you know, not CVS for you or it is CVS for you, we just want to make sure that you get protected. And sorry, Jay, what was the second part of that question? Oh, is it covered?
Right.
Yes, the flu shot is covered by most insurances at absolutely no cost to you. And that includes Medicare Part B as well.
Now, this may be slightly off topic, but with all of the confusion coming out of Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s health department, is there a chance that we will not see vaccines in the future like this?
You know, it's super hard to predict. You know, we always just recommend getting it when it's available for you. Stick to, you know, talk to your local healthcare provider, your local doctor, you know, those that are qualified to make those recommendations for you. So stay close to them.
So last question for you. If listeners want to learn more about the flu vaccine, protecting themselves, or in fact making the appointment, how do they do that?
CVS.com. We have an app as well that can help you. But just general information about the flu and the vaccine, you can also check out the CDC website. CDC.gov will also give you some great questions and answers as well.
All right. We want to thank Victoria for providing insight this morning. And for Columbus Perspective, I'm Jay Fox.
The Fan.
You're listening to Columbus Perspective on The Fan. Here's Jay Fox.
Every day in the United States, around 6,000 women begin the transition into menopause, a natural phase of aging caused by declining hormone levels. While menopause can bring symptoms that seriously affect quality of life, effective treatments, including hormone replacement therapies, can help. Joining us today on Columbus Perspective to share more is Dr. Elizabeth Loudon, an independent endocrinologist, triple board certified, who provides care exclusively with a product called Henry Meds. Good morning.
Good morning, Jay. Thanks so much for having me.
It's our pleasure. I know that we're talking about menopause in women, but surprisingly enough, as I have just experienced, you can also have menopause in men.
So men can have declining hormones over time, yes.
So when we talk about menopause, are we specifically talking about just declining hormones, or is there more to the story than that?
Menopause and perimenopause are a normal and natural part of aging for women. As women get older, their normal cycling hormones start to decline. But first, during the perimenopausal state, they become a lot more erratic. So the highs can be higher, the lows can be lower. And it's these changes in hormones, both with the ups and downs and the overall decline, that cause all of those symptoms that women are experiencing in menopause.
What are some of the most common and maybe overlooked symptoms? Because I remember when my mother went through this and she had fatigue, she had irritability, she had unexplained aches and pains that she never had before. She even had migraine headaches.
Yes, you are so right. So media likes to portray the very common symptoms, hot flashes, night sweats, but so many of those other symptoms are part of menopause and hormonal changes. So women can have fatigue, joint pain, differences in thinking, difficulty concentrating. They can have the joint pains, migraines, changes in libido. Their body shape can even change. So many women think that this is just something intrinsic to them. They don't understand that it's part of their hormones changing. Luckily, though, we have treatments that can help, that help with a lot of those symptoms and side effects that you mentioned earlier, called hormonal replacement therapy.
Why has that been so controversial? We've heard a lot of negative about it, but I know a lot of people personally who have had hormone replacement therapy and swear by it. What's the problem?
Yeah, so let's clear that up. Because there was a study done about 20, 25 years ago. Yes, Jay, a quarter of a century ago, there was a study that people are still talking about that caused a lot of fear surrounding hormone replacement therapy. So we have learned so much more about menopause, about treatment for menopause in the past two decades since that time. We know more about how to treat women. So in that study, they were using much higher doses of hormones. Now we use lower doses that are very personalized towards each patient. They were also treating women that were much older. Now we're treating women who are in that kind of perimenopausal, early menopausal state. So we know, after all of this additional data, that hormone replacement therapy, as you've seen, is effective and safe for most women.
Now, once you get on it, you're on it for life, or do you ever come off of it?
So everybody's treatment is individual, and certainly there can't be reasons that doses will be adjusted or stopped, but that's a discussion that everyone has to have with their doctor, the person that they trust with their health care.
Health and Human Services is in disarray right now, and there is a lot of confusion about everything from vaccines to treatments for all kinds of diseases. And in fact, you know, just recently it was talked about that Tylenol may have an issue with autism, which seems to not have a scientific basis. Is there any concern that the current administration will come after hormone replacement therapies?
You know, I'd say as a physician, I like to stick with the science. So we pay attention to what's evidence-based, what's guideline-driven, and right now, everything that we know about hormone replacement therapy says that it's safe. So as providers, we're going to continue to provide the best care that we can to our patients, regardless of any other outside influences.
So who is the candidate for hormone therapy, and what treatment options are available?
So hormone replacement therapy is by prescription only, and that's actually a good thing. You want to make sure that you're having very individualized care, and so you have to see a healthcare provider, a physician, a nurse practitioner, a physician's assistant, someone who can talk about your medical history, your family history, and your personalized symptoms. When we think about treatment options, we think about three main hormones: estrogen, progesterone, and testosterone. We use creams, patches, pills, sometimes injections, all to replace these three levels of hormones in different combinations for every woman.
Dr. Loudon, where can women go for more information?
So women can go to a healthcare provider that they trust. At Henry Mentz, where I am, I know we sit down and talk to each woman individually. We really take care of their needs. It's important to find someone that makes you feel like that. So if you go talk to someone and you don't feel like you're getting the care that you need, you can find somebody else. They're always here to help.
And is most of this covered by insurance, or is this an out-of-pocket expense?
So both. Insurance does cover these therapies. Some providers use insurance and some don't. So there's lots of options available.
We want to thank Dr. Elizabeth Loudon for her insights this morning. And for Columbus Perspective, I'm Jay Fox.
The Fan.
This is Columbus Perspective on The Fan. Here's more from Jay Fox.
20 years ago, Hurricane Katrina ravaged the Gulf Coast. And though we're currently in hurricane season, a lull in tropical activity has kept things quiet thus far this year. Hurricane season is not over yet, gang. The Atlantic hurricane season runs through November 30th, which means the threat remains strong for a while yet. Joining us today is a professional storm chaser and the world's top hurricane chaser. An honor to have Josh Morgerman on the program and sharing his insights about the current season on Columbus Perspective. How are you, buddy?
Good, good. Thanks for having me, Jay. Appreciate it.
It's our pleasure. All right. We're in landlocked central Ohio, save for some local lakes, rivers, and streams. Why should we be concerned about hurricanes, and how can they impact central Ohio?
You know, they actually really can. And some of your listeners who, you know, maybe are a little older might remember that some of the big hurricanes in American history that smashed the coast actually penetrated all the way inland and reached Ohio as tropical storms, meaning they were still like real storms, like Hugo in 1989, Frederick in 1979, Audrey in 1957. So you guys absolutely can get downstream tropical cyclone impacts. It does happen.
What's your take on the current season? What do we need to be prepared for between now and the end of November?
Well, it's totally bipolar. You know, every hurricane season has its own vibe, and this one is just like it's bipolar. It started kind of slow. Then we had a big Category 5. Then it was just dead all of August, which is usually when it starts getting busy, and it's been dead up to now. But all of a sudden, in the last couple of days, it's woken up. We had a Category 4 hurricane out in the Atlantic, and we might have something threatening the east coast of the United States in a couple of days. So it seems like it's coming back to life, and it's September, which is peak season.
Does global warming or the ozone layer have any impact on hurricane season?
There's a lot of research being done about that, and the peer-reviewed, like the reliable sort of research suggests, you know, a couple things. One is it doesn't seem like there are necessarily more hurricanes worldwide, but it does seem that of the ones that do form, more of them can sort of intensify and do what's called a rapid intensification. That seems to be happening now more, and some folks think that might have to do with climate change. And then the other thing, which also could affect Ohio, is because of the warmer atmosphere, hurricanes can hold more moisture. So we're seeing some more extreme rainfall totals from these things. And of course, when they penetrate inland, even as the winds die down, they could still bring tremendous rain to the Ohio Valley, places like that. So those are areas of kind of concern or interest. But I do want to point out that it's not as the relationship between climate change and hurricanes is not as simple as a lot of people think, where it's like, okay, you know, the climate's warming, so we're getting more hurricanes. And it's way more complicated, actually.
Well, I know last year we had a severe drought, and then we faced severe flooding, especially in southeast Ohio, that had a lot to do with storms that came up through the Gulf of Mexico. And it doesn't seem to matter whether it's warm outside or not.
Yeah, absolutely. One thing that a lot of folks, they get confused, they think that climate change, okay, if the earth is warming, that means it's all about, oh, everything, it's hotter all the time. It's hotter everywhere. Actually, no. Climate change, what it actually is doing more is that it's sort of accentuating extremes, meaning there are more intense cold snaps, too. And what you just described about how you had a drought and then you had really heavy rain, that kind of a sort of like, you know, kind of crazy fluctuations and things, some folks think that is actually what climate change is doing. It's enhancing extremes in either direction.
All right. We need a moment with Professor Josh now. Okay.
You're making me nerd out.
That's okay. Love it. What's the difference between a hurricane and a typhoon?
Oh, I'm glad you asked this. Absolutely nothing. It's the same exact thing. So hurricanes are the one of these phenomena that there's not a standard word that everyone around the world uses. So in North America, we call it a hurricane. And even in Spanish-speaking countries in Mexico, it's a huracan, same word. Okay. In East Asia, it's a typhoon. In Australia, they call it a cyclone. Okay. In India, it's a severe cyclonic storm. It's just everyone calls it their own thing. But a typhoon equals a hurricane.
Okay, and the word typhoon, we tend to hear that with the West Coast and Asia, correct?
it's East Asia only. It's okay. only that region, because hurricanes on our side of the Pacific, like the ones off the west coast of Mexico, we call those hurricanes. But on the other side of the Pacific, you know, near Taiwan and Japan and China, those are typhoons.
How do folks prepare their homes for hurricane season? I know we've seen all kinds of news images with people putting up clapboard and all of that. What really works?
Okay, so this is a subject near and dear to my heart because I live in Bay St. Louis, Mississippi, which has been ground zero for like the worst hurricanes in American history. So I built a home right on the coast, okay, like in Hurricane Central. So I thought a lot about this. And a lot of what I thought about is stuff that applies to your listeners as well in Ohio, because you guys are no strangers to crazy windstorms, you know, severe thunderstorms, downbursts, tornadoes. So three things. One, your roof is one of the most important things, making sure it's properly surfaced and properly fastened and connected. That's one thing. The next thing is your windows. You know, if you live in hurricane country, you want to have either impact glass or you want to have some way of covering them, like I have a shutter system. And then the third thing is the siding on your house. So this is really important. I think of my siding on my house as like the house's coat of armor. And I went with fiber cement siding because I wanted something that was impact resistant and could withstand extremely high winds. And the brand I went with was actually James Hardie, which is the North American leader in that space. But it looks beautiful. It looks like traditional wood, but it's impact resistant, moisture resistant, termites hate it, and it's non-combustible. So it absolutely is very protective of my home. And that was something I really thought about, because in hurricanes, you get those crazy winds with debris flying in the air, which you guys actually see in Ohio in severe thunderstorms as well.
Now, I haven't been a dinner guest in your house yet, but I'm curious to know if it is one floor or two floors, and if it's a slab on stilts or it has a basement.
It's a great question. So it's one story, which is very common in coastal Mississippi. It's like a cottage-like house. And a lot of the houses are on stilts. I'm in Bay St. Louis, which is a little town outside of New Orleans. I built my house in the higher part of town, so I did not have to have my house on stilts, but it's on a raised chain wall foundation. So it's a solid foundation. There's no space under the house, but it's raised. The house is a good 4 feet off the ground. So because I'm at 19 feet above sea level, but we know in the really extreme hurricanes, the Gulf can come up that high. So that's something I got to worry about too. But I'm in a pretty good situation. My house is a pretty safe house when it comes to hurricanes.
When did you build it?
I built it and I finished it in 2024. I mean, it's a brand spanking new house.
Okay. So was that before or after hurricane season 24?
It was before. The house is in its second hurricane season, and so far it has not been tested. Everything is passed to the west or the east. And of course, I'm extremely confident in my house, but I would, I'm interested to see what happens, you know, when we get something. I expect it to come through without a ding.
So your house is like an umbrella on a sunny day.
That's what it feels like right now. But at some point, it's going to be an umbrella on a really rainy day, because it's Mississippi and we get crazy hurricanes. Back in 1969, we had a direct hit from a Category 5, which has only been a few of those in American history. And one of them passed right over Bay St. Louis. So history will repeat itself.
I remember driving 10 west after Hurricane Katrina, and it was so bad that I was with my late father at the time, and we actually stopped and participated in some of the cleanup just because we felt compelled. That was the costliest natural disaster in history. 20 years later, what's that region like?
Yeah, I mean, my town, Bay St. Louis, was ground zero. A lot of my town was wiped out. And in fact, my house that I built it actually on the grave of another house that had been there. My block had been wiped out. Coastal Mississippi has come roaring back. And it's funny, you know, nationwide, people, when you say Hurricane Katrina, people think New Orleans. And what a lot of people don't know, but you and your dad saw, was coastal Mississippi just got obliterated. That part of the disaster was not covered as well. I'm happy to say 20 years later, coastal Mississippi is just, it's booming. It would be unrecognizable to you now because of how cleaned up and nice it is. And I think it's built back better, I have to say. I think the houses are better constructed now. I think a lot of people are using hardy siding, you know, instead of just vinyl or, you know, traditional wood, which rots. Folks are doing things to make their houses more hurricane resistant. And I think that the next time we get, you know, next big hurricane, I think we're going to get through it a lot better. I wanted to ask you, actually, how long after the hurricane did you and your dad go through the area?
It was roughly 6 months.
Oh, and, yeah. So it was still fresh.
It was still fresh.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And you could see it. The radius literally went from Tallahassee all the way to New Orleans and beyond.
I'm glad you pointed that out, because that was one of the unique traits of Katrina. Not only was it a strong hurricane, but the radius of the destruction was unreal. Just that the landfall point was the Louisiana-Mississippi state line, but the fact that you had serious wind and storm surge damage well into Alabama, into the Florida Panhandle, the scope, the size of the impact zone was incredible.
Absolutely. So if we, the listener, want to learn more about hurricanes or preparedness, where would you direct us for a good layman's guide?
You know what? Our National Hurricane Center, we are lucky. We have, of all the nations on earth, we've got the best hurricane forecasting agency. So just go to the National Hurricane Center site, and they have just great tools for like learning more, and they keep us informed, even if you're in inland states. And if you want to learn more about how to get the right siding for your house, go to jameshardy.com.
Now, last question for you. Why did you choose to be a storm chaser?
That's a great question. Honestly, and I really mean this, I didn't choose it. I was born this way, and I'm not kidding. It wasn't something I was like, oh, I want to be a storm chaser. I just, since I was a toddler, I just had some drug-like reaction to violent weather. I'm just drawn to it, you know? And it's just since I was a kid, you know? And unfortunately, now I'm an adult, and I can do stupid things and go after it.
Do you have family now?
I am not, because I'm not marriage material.
Well, that was what I was going to say, is if you're married and you have kids, you're not chasing anything except the mortgage.
You know, exactly. I mean, I think we're all put on this earth for different reasons. And I was put on this earth to hunt storms, be an adventurer. And that means, I'm not marriage material.
Well,
it takes all types to make this world go round, I guess.
Amen to that. We love watching you on TV, and we have really enjoyed our time with you here on the radio. Thank you to Josh Morgerman for being with us. And for Columbus Perspective, of course, I'm Jay Fox.
Columbus Perspective is a public affairs presentation of WBNS Radio. The opinions expressed on this program are those of its guests and do not necessarily reflect those of WBNS Radio, its staff, management, or sponsors.
The Fan.
You're listening to Columbus Perspective on The Fan. Now, courtesy of our sister station, WBNS 10TV, here's Doug Petcash from the Sunday morning public affairs program, Face the State. A new edition can be seen this morning at 11:30 on 10TV.
100 years is a major milestone. One of the best-known homes in Ohio has now hit the century mark. It's commonly known as the Governor's Mansion, but its official name is the Ohio Governor's Residence and Heritage Garden. First Lady Fran DeWine was kind enough to spend nearly 2 hours with us to show us around the historic home and expansive gardens.
The Governor's Residence and Heritage Garden sit on 3.5 acres on the corner of North Park and Maryland Avenues in Bexley. The 16,000-square-foot home with 25 rooms was built in 1925 by businessman Malcolm Jeffrey in the Jacobean architectural style.
And this is the welcoming foyer. So if you walk in, you'll see this huge, I kind of love the doors in this house, you know. Not only are they beautiful arches, but if you see the thickness of the doors, you know, I think this is really pretty amazing, the thickness of this door.
First Lady Fran DeWine showed us some of the historic and artistic touches throughout the home. Most of the art was done by Ohio artists or is on loan from the Ohio History Connection.
And so one of the things I wanted to point out was this is part of the Buckeye Suite. When Janet Voinovich was First Lady, William Seal, who's a designer, architect, did a lot of work at the White House, also did our State House when we did the renovation, and he did some work here. And so Janet Voinovich gave him like a banana box full of buckeye branches, and he had the buckeye suite. He had these hand-carved. So I think they're really kind of cool. You know, they've got the, you can see the buckeyes. Some people just look at them as ornate, but when you actually focus in on that being a buckeye branch and buckeyes, that's, I think that's kind of cool.
You were talking about this painting that's here above the stair.
Yeah,
the stairs.
So this was done by Howard Chandler Christie, and it actually, you know, belongs to the History Connection. But it's been on loan here, actually Janet Voinovich, since Janet Voinovich was First Lady. And, you know, I think it's kind of significant that he's a very famous artist. He did the Battle of Lake Erie, which is actually here at the State House and at the U.S. Capitol. And he did the signing of the Constitution at the U.S. Capitol. But he was born in Morgan County in Ohio.
The home was donated to the state in 1955. This old film from 1957 shows craftsmen renovating the home, working on the ornate windows and main staircase, getting it ready to become Ohio's executive residence. Governor C. William O'Neill was the first governor to live here. Governor Mike DeWine is the 11th.
Which room are we entering now?
So we're entering the dining room, and this is a room that we use a lot, you know, when Mike was first elected. One way that we got to know all the legislators, you know, the people in the General Assembly, is inviting them a few at a time for breakfast. And that was, you know, I could talk about the Imagination Library. Mike could talk about some of the things he wanted to do. They could tell us their feelings. So it was a good way just to get to know everybody. And so this is the living room, you know, and it's a special room. We love having the piano here. It's a Baldwin piano made in Cincinnati, Ohio. And this is a very comfortable room. The Kasichs did not live here, but Karen Kasich did an incredible job of returning it to its original colors and putting comfortable furniture in as well so that you could live as a family and entertain and not all antiques. And so she put these beautiful blue sofas here. And, you know, this is Elijah Pierce, a Columbus artist. This is a portrait of him. You know, he was a barber, and he did a lot of wood carvings, mostly of Bible stories.
How significant is it that this house is now 100 years old?
Well, I think it's exciting. You know, it represents a place in time, you know, when Columbus was growing, and this was the suburbs, you know, and beautiful homes being built here. And I think any house, any elegant house, needs to celebrate its 100th birthday.
And what do you enjoy about living here?
I enjoy having company here. I enjoy, you know, it's a beautiful house, beautiful gardens, and I enjoy showing it to people, you know, when we have guests, just letting them be able to walk around and look at it. And I always tell them, this isn't my house. You know, this is our house. This is Ohio's house. And so I like to show it off.
I think I've done interviews with the governor in this room before.
This is one of his favorite places to do interviews. This is the governor's study. That's what's known as the governor's study. And if you look at the old pictures, these chairs, and this has been here for a long time. So it's really kind of cool. The big globe here, Janet Voinovich bought this at a tag sale, and it's kind of at a tag sale locally, and it's kind of fun to look at it because the countries have changed a lot since then. Some of the furniture, like these pieces, were actually made in the Mansfield Reformatory. You know, it was built, the reformatory was built in the 1870s, you know, as you know, to help reform young men and teach them skills and woodworking skills. And so these were carved there, and the picture frame there is carved from there. So,
and it's so ornate too, with the faces.
Yeah, they're kind of fun. So
the residence has hosted some very well-known names over the years: Martin Luther King Jr., Walter Mondale, George W. Bush, and more.
If you look at this picture, this is Governor C. William O'Neill, and this is John F. Kennedy and Edward Kennedy. This is Governor Rhodes and Ronald Reagan, and this is the day he endorsed him. And after he endorsed him, someone asked Governor Rhodes, well, why did you endorse him today? And he said, yesterday would have been too early and tomorrow too late. So.
Just off the governor's study is the Great Room. The governor and First Lady hold meetings and host dinners and other events here.
We actually found the original drawings of the house, And so this is, so we had this frame for this special year. So this is the drawing of the house in 1925. And then
that is the actual
drawing.
That's
the actual drawing.
And you just had it framed this year?
We just had it framed this year. We just found it, you know, somewhere in some archive somewhere we found it. So that's and then the blueprints were there. And the blueprints are kind of interesting. This is just the first floor. But if you like do the blueprints of the basement, there's like two coal rooms, there's an organ room, just all sorts of things that you wouldn't think of, you know.
An organ room.
Yeah. I don't know whether they had a big organ here. I don't know the music. I don't know. I have no idea. But anyway, it's kind of fun to see and how it's changed a little bit.
Mrs. DeWine then took us to a place the public never gets to see on tours, behind the scenes in the kitchen.
I kind of love this old part of the house because it really shows, you know, if you look here, you actually see, you know, the china. What do you think that's?
Oh. Okay.
So there's the china and the crystal and everything. You know, it's all kind of laid out here. And it's a working kitchen. You can see the dishes are in the sink. It's, you know, but, you know, great freezers and refrigerators. And look, Jason made some bread today. So, but see the old equipment? It's still Hobart. It's still great equipment.
I guess I expected this to be bigger.
You know, we would like it to be bigger a lot of times, but it is what it is. In an old house, you work with what you have. All right, there she goes.
And we're coming out into the Heritage Gardens?
Yes, we are. So this is really kind of a special place. So when Hope Taft was First Lady, she established a set of gardens that represent the different areas in Ohio. And so we have Tall Prairie Gardens, we have Sand Dune Gardens, we have an Appalachian Garden. So we have all these different kinds of gardens, and it's fun. And on Wednesdays, we have volunteer gardeners that come. Hope Taft still organizes them, and we have between 30 and 50 gardeners on any day.
The grounds also include water gardens, complete with colorful fish and a resident turtle named Spike.
The children love this. We have nets on here right now because we've had some blue herons take some of our fish. Oh, there's Spike. So Spike is our turtle. I don't know how many years I think he's been here for over 20 years. But he's a red slider.
Uh-huh.
Now this had, a couple of weeks ago, this had cattails growing in it, very tall cattails. So it was sort of like a jungle and he could hide. But there he is now. We cut it down for the winter time. But my contribution is the storybook trail. So that's what I'm going to show you. So, and this is a willow oak. And if you look, you know, there's holes under it. You know, so I knew some of them go way deep into it and under it, so I knew that Peter Rabbit must live here. So I figured we'll do the tale of Peter Rabbit. So this is where it starts.
Kids can explore Peter Rabbit's story at different stations throughout the Heritage Garden.
And then she goes to the Bunny Bakery, and so to get brown bread and currant buns, and so I had to make a Bunny Bakery. So this is my Bunny Bakery that I made. And when I have my little 4-year-old grandkids here, they think this is really the coolest thing. They'll mix up stuff and play around here. But I just made that from a flower pot. And, you know, I pretended like I was a mother bunny, and I got, you know, the prettiest rocks I could find and some broken china and even a broken arrowhead here in the middle. And so anyway, so the kids can put their stuff in the oven to cook.
The residence is eco-friendly with solar panels and underground cistern system to store water, and the gardens are organic. The First Lady says they use the vegetables grown here in meals at the residence and donate some produce to different organizations.
Do you ever come out here and just kind of soak up the piece?
Oh, yeah, it is. I like to walk out here at least every night. Me and Dolly come out here, and it's just kind of fun. And we have, like, right around here, we have a lot of blackberries. There's none left now, but there's still, mm-hmm. You can see these are blackberry bushes here. So, yeah. You know, so if kids are walking here and, you know, they can pick a blackberry. What food we don't use in the house, we donate. All those beds there they've just sort of covered them up now because everything is gone.
Mrs. DeWine says they've done a lot of things to keep the home and property in good shape, setting it on a solid foundation for the next 100 years. She says it's part of their job.
When you live here, you you keep things up. You know, you see it every day. And so I think it's always important, you know, for the governor to live here just to make sure that everything stays, you know, in good repair, and houses that are lived in are better houses.
You can take a tour of the governor's residence and heritage garden. They are offered most Wednesdays throughout the year with special hours in December. You can schedule a tour on the Friends of the Ohio Governor's Residence website. Changes might be coming to a type of sports gambling known as prop betting. Those are wagers made on an individual player's performance. As we've reported, federal agents arrested an NBA player accused of tipping off gamblers that he was going to leave a game early with an injury. It was part of a blockbuster indictment recently. Here in Ohio, a pitch by a Cleveland Guardians baseball player got a lot of attention. In the third inning of a game, Luis Ortiz threw a pitch in the dirt. CBS News reports he was suspended soon after allegations that he might have done it on purpose to help gamblers who had bet on that pitch being outside the strike zone. Governor Mike DeWine now wants to ban prop bets in the Buckeye State. He had this to say on CBS Mornings.
One pitch, you know, one shot of the basket. I don't think that's what most people thought of at that time, but it's clearly taken off, and it's clearly a problem.
Now, it's not only Ohio considering a change. Other states are proposing legislation to update their sports gambling laws to outlaw prop betting.
Again, that's courtesy of our sister station, WBNS 10TV, from the Sunday morning public affairs program, Face the State. A new edition can be seen this morning at 11:30 on 10TV. This has been Columbus Perspective, a weekly public affairs presentation of The Fan. Heard each Sunday morning at 6 on WBNS FM 97.1 The Fan and on 1460 AM The Fan 2.